On episode 207 of the Tennis Files podcast, you'll learn how to win the big points with Mark Jeffrey and Ramon Osa.
Welcome to the Tennis Files podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Do you feel like you have the potential to achieve a lot more in your tennis than you have thus far? Do you have trouble on the mental side of things when you play your matches? Well, then this episode is a great one for you because we have on Mark Jeffrey, who is a high performance coach and the founder of Big Point Player Training, and he mentors players and coaches on how to perform their best under high pressure situations. And we also have Ramon Osa, who is a friend of the podcast and the summit and has been on them before, obviously. And he is a world-class tennis coach and the founder of Osa Tennis 360. And so this is actually the first time, I believe, on the podcast that I've had two other guests or two guests on at the same time to speak with me. So that was a lot of fun. I obviously did a little bit of less talking because we had some great information from both Mark and Ramon. And we talked about mental toughness displayed in the Wimbledon finals matches. We actually recorded this one on Monday, so the day after the men's final and 2 days after the women's final. And we talked about the key elements of performing your best and a lot of key insights into Mark's training and the key areas that have provided his students with the most benefit, as well as Ramon's experiences dealing with pressure and the main principles that he's learned that have been most effective for him. So definitely a great episode for you to listen in on. And there is also a free quiz that you can check out. The link is in the show notes. And the URL is mehrban.thewinningformula.tennis. So that's mehrban.thewinningformula.tennis. And again, it's just a free quiz to help you assess where you're at with respect to the mental game and just overall your game and how you are performing. So definitely check that out. That is an affiliate link, but the quiz is totally free to take. All right, with that, I would like to present you the interview with Mark and Ramon. So here it is.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Tennis Files podcast. It's really an honor and a pleasure to have with me Mark Jeffrey and Ramon Osa. And you've probably seen Ramon before on my summits and on the podcast. And Mark is also a fantastic expert to bring along. And we're going to target specifically the mental game and Mark's great system, which is the Big Point Player Tennis Training. So Mark and Ramon, and by the way, this is the first time I've had three people instead of just the normal two-person interview. So this is going to be fun. But welcome to you both. Awesome. Appreciate you all joining.
Thanks for having us, man. This is going to be great.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to have a lot of fun here. So as we're recording this, this is actually the day after the men's final and 2 days after the women's final. So we're definitely going to touch upon that. But I just want to ask you both for your impressions on the finals matches.
Ramon, you kick off. Go on.
Well, you know, as a staunch Federer fan and an admirer of Djokovic, I was hoping that Berrettini would come out and somehow find a way to win in that first set. I was pretty hopeful, but you just knew, you know, you knew the whole time that Djokovic was just getting ready to kick into that next gear. So I don't think any of us are surprised that he won in four. Not to say Berrettini didn't have his chances. It's just, it all comes down to those big points, right? And Berrettini didn't find a way, and Djokovic did like he always does. And then with Barty and Pliskova, I mean, I just love watching Barty play. First of all, she really gets it from the whole package, right? She understands pressure. She used to play, I think, competitive cricket. Is that right?
Yeah,
she did. She played cricket. Yeah. And Pliskova looked good. Yep. Pliskova looked good in the second set. Barty was carving her up with that backhand slice over and over again. And again, it came down to just a few points in each of those games. which, you know, me and Mark will talk with you guys about today. But it was awesome. And my wife was going crazy the whole time because she's pretty passionate too. So it's great to watch.
Awesome, Ramon. How about you, Mark?
Well, one of my nightmares is tossing for ends playing against Djokovic. And then you suddenly look up into his face and his eyes, and you see a bottomless pit of assassin warrior. You go, okay, I give you the match now, Jock. Is that okay? So he's robotic, and he's dedicated his life to continual growing, continual learning, deselecting the unnecessary. I think people have to admire what he's dedicated his life to. And people may not find it beautiful. I do. But it's effective.
Yeah, 100%, Mark. And you were talking before we hit the record button about Ash Barty and, you know, how she won the first 14 points. So can you expound upon that a bit more?
Yes. So first of all, and we'll get onto it later, but I think very few people, even the elite pros, don't really know what pressure is. They don't know why it invades the body. They never train under simulated pressure. They kind of just do their best. And you can train a lot of that on the court. But when you have that long walk from the men or the ladies' changing room, and you're walking past the military that are there, and then you're going down the steps and you see the Rudyard Kipling "If" poem, and you can see all the names engraved onto the board, and then you stand there. Well, you've got a lot of time to think. And possibly then all the training goes out the window, and you then obviously walk onto the court and you do the toss up and do a couple of minutes warm up. And then the umpire says, you know, ladies championship final. And then 14 points go past. It's easy. And then I think that what she did do well was actually find a way into the match. And who knows if she'd started off without gifting 14 points.
Yeah. No, great observations from you both. And yeah, it was pretty impressive that that Ash Barty also kept her nerve, you know, even though she had the match in her pocket in the second set, I think off a break, and, you know, lost that to Pliskova and still managed to recover. So what's the key in that instance? You know, when a player, they think they have the match won and then they let the lead slip. So what's the key to actually resetting in that situation?
Whoa. Gosh, right. Cutting it short, first of all, Djokovic was one of his many interviews after Wimbledon. And what he went on about a lot was that he spends as much time on mental and emotional training than he does on physical and ball hitting, with the ability to bounce back and reset and be in the present. And where he is today to where he was a few years ago is much, much quicker. So we have a number of mentors. I have a Kung Fu master that's been a Kung Fu master for 28 years. And one of his favorite sayings to me, Mark, is winning or losing is like having a cup of tea. So if you can be trained to strip out the emotions and the what ifs and just be in the present and have processes to kick in and then execute the point and reset, go through your processes, kick in, play the point, you can be into a little machine that just keeps on going. As soon as you step out of your process, then thoughts, feelings, and emotions have a chance to invade you. And it's like a virus. It's like COVID coming into you. So even though you know the virus is in, it's really difficult to get the virus back out. So I think the training is to make sure that there is no opportunity to the virus to get in and have a little hook. And then you just need to play. Do not look at the scoreboard, because the scoreboard is a feeder for emotions, and emotions dictate how you play. Whether you won a great point, you've got emotions. Whether you've got a bad point and shanked it, there are emotions. Emotions don't help you. So the training is to strip the emotions out, play assassin-like one point at a time, which is what every coach told you when you started off Mirban. Yeah, they said two things. One, keep your eye on the ball. Two, play every point as a point. And only the elite do both those things.
Yeah, great points. And I've got a couple of follow-up questions. I guess one would be, you know, I know you talked about not looking at the score or anything, but how do we separate ourselves when, you know, we do know the score in our head, like you obviously, you know, usually we'll call it out before each point. So how do we still separate ourselves despite that issue?
Okay. So obviously it's a challenge and obviously it is there percolating. So I wear a badge of pride that I don't know what the score is. And most people, if they don't know what the score, they feel foolish and silly that they don't know what the score is. So it takes some training to play one point at a time. And probably the nearest that I will get to playing points is play 0 to 4 points where the opposition points don't count. Okay, so I'm just playing first to one, and then first to two, first to three, and I might be lucky enough to get to four, in which case the game is done unless we're in juice. So, yeah, the whole training is to, and that's why it's a challenge, and that's why a few people do it, to strip out the emotions and the knowledge of the score and just play what's in front of you, be 100% present. Because as soon as you're thinking about the future, as soon as you're thinking about the past, you've got less and less where it counts right now.
Yeah.
I could give you a stat just to illustrate something, which and Ramon and I are full of stats, and we get off on this. So there was a recent survey of the ATP Top 100 on how much they thought mental accounted to their ability to step out from the pack of top 200, top 200, 300, and get into top 100. And they allocated 40% of mental training was their ability to separate themselves. And the more they went up from 150, 50, 10, 10 to 4, the more that 40% went up to 60%, 70%. So the question for everybody listening now is just mentally think, well, over the decades, how many hours have you spent hitting balls, improving technique, getting better? Just think about what that figure is. And then ask yourself, did you spend 40% of the time on mental and emotional training? Or 50 or 60%? And the answer is probably, well, I didn't even spend 4%. So we know that, you know, movement and hitting, as Ramon likes to say, is your entrance ticket to pressure and big points, but your exit ticket is your identity and your thoughts and your emotions. So it always, when you know that, it always strikes you as, well, why don't people train what's going to win? Why do they just train what's going to play better?
Go ahead.
Just
Ramon,
to follow up with that, Mirban, I think the tricky thing is, even if you're sitting in a corner and you're meditating every morning and you're getting a hold of those thoughts, feelings, and emotions, you're developing a skill, which is an important skill of detachment and getting out of those nervous thoughts and feelings. But unless you're integrating that type of training within the context of a tennis match and being in a point and being from 15 to 30 to 40, Mark calls it training in silos. You're training a skill that is not integrated necessarily with the totality of skills that you're going to need to go out and execute in a match. So I think one of the keys is finding ways to bring those elements of pressure and accountability and scoring into your training and making everything super accountable, layering in that pressure so that when you get to the big moments, you've been there so many times and you've done the training to a point where the training was harder than the actual match. You were going through more distractions, more different things with pressure, so that when you get into the match, you've been there so many times, you've built real belief because you've seen yourself execute in those situations over and over again. So I think that's a big part of it too.
Yeah, Ramon, great points. And how do you create that environment of pressure? Like, what are some examples?
Great. So we have 9 layers of pressure in our training program that you go through progressively. So the first one is, first of all, everything is done with targets because targets are binary. You know, you're either hitting the target or you're not. And there's no way around that. You gotta hit the target. And you can start with a big target and you want to get to a point where you're executing that target at 70% or better. And then obviously your reward is a smaller target. And then you can add layers of revolutions and power and all that stuff. But hitting the targets is first. Then the second part is personal accountability. So actually saying to whoever you're training with, saying out loud, I'm going to hit my serve to this location and I'm going to hit my forehand to this location. So now you've got an audible layer of accountability where everybody's going to know if I screw up and I hit a perfect serve down the tee, but I was aiming out wide, that didn't accomplish the goal. And then we have other ones, so dynamic exercise. So obviously in tennis, we're playing 2 to 3 second points, maximum intensity, moving with aggressiveness. Then we got 25 seconds to rest and recover. So we bring in layers of dynamic exercise in between having to execute our patterns. And then we've got other things like distractions. So like if you're with a coach, you could have them, you know, yell, eucalyptus, right, as you're about to serve and see if you can actually go out and execute after he did everything he could to. And Mark loves this, by the way. And Mark, if I'm missing anything, jump in here. We've got...
The only other thing would be gamification. I think we've got different scoring systems to play with your brain as you're aiming for a target. And most of our targets would, at least an element of the target would be outside the white line. So we really do play for targets and we get points for hitting targets. And unlike serving into the box where there's a large area that's in and there's a small area that's out, with us, we have a small area that's in and a large area that's out. And the reason for saying what you're going to do is that we, all of us, including me, if we're going to serve down the tee, but we don't get it in the tee, but we get it in the box, for somehow we just immediately forgive ourselves. It doesn't occur to us that we didn't do what we said we were going to do. So accountability and the I will and honoring the promise to yourself is part of the training. And probably the thing that Ramon didn't allude to there is that we do train all the things at the same time. So tactics, ability to execute the tactics, the simulation of pressure. And whilst doing that, then we can flush out the thoughts or the feelings or the emotions that occur to you. So at exactly the same time, we can train the 3 inches by 3 inches space between the ears, which is about the winning the points, at the same time as the 4'6" by 78 feet, which is the width and the length of the alley. And then that brings us on to us training in the alley, because the court is not the big court that we think the court is. The court is made up of alleys. So if you train with an alley, you can find out very quickly, do you spray the ball? Or does your serve or does your forehand or whatever hit the alley consistently? Because if you can't do it in training, you won't be able to do it in a match. Does that make sense? Or have I in particular just gone off on one?
No, that sounds, that makes a lot of sense to me. And appreciate you both for the insight there. In terms of, you know, situations that players encounter that they have a lot of trouble with, you know, I guess one in particular is when you're facing somebody who's like a higher seed, and, you know, a lot of times players, they just end up, you know, mentally they're already done. So, I mean, how do you coach your players to, you know, give themselves a chance before they play these higher ranked players?
These are so good questions. And the first of all, one of the driving forces of getting into this training was me playing as Army number one against REF number one at Wimbledon. Typical underdog, not expected to win, get into the winning position, find a way to self-sabotage yourself. So that kind of got me off on the path. So whether you are playing somebody worse than yourself, because that is also a challenge, or whether you're playing somebody better than yourself. The game is for you to hit your targets. The game is for you to do two-shot combinations. Just like a boxer does two-shot combinations, the military train in two-shot combos, we as tennis players should be serving out wide, running around your forehand, hitting into the backhand cage. We should be in the disrupting of the baseline to baseline, drag them wide past the alley, open up the court, execute the court. So provided we are playing in our targets, then that's all that we're trying to do. And the targets are there because they're evidence-based. Data says you will win the majority of the points if you hit the targets. So if you're playing somebody a lot better than you, instead of trying to play tennis and be in the fight, you're just having a competition with yourself that says, can I hit the target? And by and large, if you hit the target, you'll do well. And that technique also comes into play when you're playing people worse than yourself, because as we know, we all go or can go mentally AWOL and then find it difficult to come back. And now you're scrapping against somebody you know you should win. And again, if you were just Djokovic-like, playing your targets, playing the 1-2s, before you know it, you're just rolling all over them and the match is done.
Fantastic, Mark. Love that that system that you've outlined, which is pretty simple and, you know, works against a multitude of different opponents. So I was curious, too, to ask you, Mark, about how your time serving in the Army, you know, shaped your philosophy on the mental game and tennis.
Yes. And yes, obviously it is mental, but I just want to stress at the very same time, it's emotional. It's about identity. It's about the ability to ball strike with tactics. So all of that at the same time, whilst layering pressure on you and knowing what pressure is what we train. So we would like to think that what we train is the ability to win on autopilot, of which mental is part and parcel of it. So many things happen about. So yes, Army officer, served for 12 years, different parts of the world. Army tennis champion, played at Wimbledon many years on the trot after the main draw, of course. We used to play about a month afterwards against the RAF and the Navy. And I was just like every other tennis player, i.e. clueless on the game within the game. So I would roar like a lion. I would, you know, be mentally tough, fight my way through it. But really being clueless about the game of closing out compared to the rest of the game. And this happened years later. So these were disconnected dots that I put together when I was in my semi-retired mode. And it just occurred to me, well, everybody talks about the ability to win is how you handle pressure. Everybody talks about the big point player. And nobody says pressure is great for you and here's how you can be a big point player. So I went back to my Northern Ireland days with training with my staff sergeant. And what the military do is train, as Ramon said, mind, body, identity, skills, tactics as one piece of training. They don't have silos. And I said to him, like staff, I can do all this. I am concerned, which was code for I'm frightened about what I will do when I lead my troop down the street. And you know, there's a sniper a mile away or a crowd comes around the corner with Molotov cocktails. I am bricking it. What will I do? And staff says, trust the training, sir. The training will kick in. You know, a decade later, it's like, well, why isn't there training for tennis that you can trust and will automatically kick in under pressure when you need it most? And that's what set me off. And you will not be surprised to know, as I'm not a very creative person, the name of the training is called the Trust Method. That started me off. So much of the training is based on how the military train you know, ordinary, spotty, young officers or apprentices to perform at their very best when they have to. But then I saw Djokovic being interviewed by Jay Shetty, and he accredited his turnaround from his 2 years Hero Zero Hero on the spiritual training. So we dug quickly into the Tao, which is the underlying spiritual philosophy of Kung Fu that goes back to 1000 BC. We had some Tony Robbins and Landmark Education personal transformation training in there, and two world-class tennis coaches. So four different disciplines brought together into one method, trialed for 4 years online and offline, making it simpler till we finally get, look, this is the minimum that you need to do. You can cut, you can catch up of decades of not training, and in 30 to 60 days start beating people that you've always narrowly lost to. So, long answer to your question.
Great stuff, Mark. So, Ramon, I know you've obviously been working with Mark for a while now. What is maybe one thing that you have taken from speaking with him in his training that you think has really helped you the most? Because I know you play, obviously. So what's the maybe one or two that have really impacted you the most out of all of Mark's teaching principles?
Well, if you guys watched any of my videos, you know I wasn't a natural athlete as a kid. I started at tennis at 16, almost morbidly obese. I was pretty overweight and got pretty decent at tennis and got addicted to it, started playing all the time. And I got into college. I thought it was pretty good. We would go out and train all the time. I was feeling good. We got into an intramural final against the top team in our college. And the girl that I liked was there watching, and you know, my partner and I were up. We had two match points, and all of a sudden, in the back of my head, I just start hearing this voice that's saying, "What do you think you're doing? You know, you're not a natural athlete. You don't have a big serve. You know, you have no place being, you know, on the court with these guys." Like these are the kinds of thoughts that are going through my head. And double fault the next 2 points. Patty cake and next serve in, they crush it. Next thing we know, we're walking off the court. We've lost the deciding match. And what I think this training has helped me with the most is creating a new story of what is actually possible as a tennis player. So I only ever played doubles. And when I met Mark, Mark came to me and he was looking for some help sort of getting this method out there. And he says, "Oh, it's amazing. You know, me as a marketer, I've heard just about
it's
everything that's out there.
No one else does it.
Nobody else has ever done this before. How many times have we heard that?" So I had to put this thing to the test. And as someone who always considered himself a doubles player, because I wasn't fast enough, strong enough, all that stuff, I thought, well, the ultimate test would be to put a stake in the ground as a singles player and do the training, go through the 30-day program. Got a court at the house. I could go out and actually train this with my daughter, actually, who's hand feeding me the balls and having a great time as I go through with my tongue hanging out, by the way. So we do this
training.
How old
is your daughter?
She's 11 now and okay. Going on 16.
So not a fearsome opponent down at the baseline.
Nope. So anyway, long story short, I enter the league as a singles player. Having gone through the training at World Team Tennis, going up against, you know, high 4-0s and 4-5s, tough matches all around, but did not lose a single set the entire time going through a singles program. So the story that was going through my head of, oh, I was only a doubles player, I was probably too slow, didn't have a big enough serve, all of that stuff was instantly gone after that experience because went through the training. And as Mark said, it's all about bringing all of those disciplines of the tactics and the execution and the pressure and the sort of identity that Mark talked about, of like, what do you actually think about yourself in those big moments? Because that's how we're going to perform ultimately, you know, up to that level. So long answer, but I would say, you know, sort of my story, and that's what we hear a lot from our students, is their story of what they thought was possible shifted you know, in a really small amount of time.
Can I chip in for 1 minute, Mervan?
Sure.
Because it is trauma. When we're in these pressure situations, it is akin to trauma. And we are a pattern generating, meaning making machine. So we've only got to be under trauma once or twice, and it doesn't go well. Then the very next time we're in that situation, the pattern generating machine says, you know what happens now, don't you? And the meaning making machine says, you never play well under this, do you? And then it just repeats ad nauseum until you have some training, as Ramon says, to create a new story, to do the training, see the story become a reality. And then before you know it, which is what the training was all about, what is the training that you can trust that will automatically kick in when you need it the most? And then Ramon would have done just that. Fantastic. So no talent, no mental toughness, no... What did they say, page 34, about gratitude or whatever? You have shifted to becoming a big point player at your age and ability and kick in. And have a lot of fun, may I say. We don't talk enough about fun. All our people just have so much fun training, playing matches, and loving tiebreaks.
And I'll just say one more thing, that the training is amazingly fun, but it's also incredibly condensed and short. So instead of spending 2 hours a day for 4 days a week and, you know, grinding your body into the ground, we're talking about a few hours of training each week that is hyper-focused. That, you know, if you know about the 80-20 principle, pretty much in everything in nature, 20% of the things that you do are going to get you 80% of the results. So what Mark did brilliantly in this program is really boil it down to what are the 20% of skills that if we only focused on those things would get us 80% of the results. And so that's really what you're doing in these sessions. And people love it. Like, the 2 hours go by in the blink of an eye, and, you know, and they want to come back the next day. So it's incredibly powerful from a time standpoint. If you don't have a lot of time, if you're a professional, but you still want to go out and you want to win more matches quickly, you don't want to spend loads of hours on court hitting millions of balls and obsessing about technique, you can win more matches with the skills that you already have. And I think that's powerful for a lot of people, because we get this idea in our head that we've got to dominate our opponents, and, you know, we're going to have to spend loads and loads of time refining our technique and getting fitter and all that stuff. And all that stuff's great, but you can very quickly, by selecting the right skills, you know, and we really only train three shots if you're playing singles. That's the serve, the return to serve, and the forehand. And spending a disproportionate amount of time on those skills and do really well with it.
See, Ramon, as a man from Los Angeles that we've never yet met, never yet been on court, I always listen to you and think, oh, amazing, he is an ambassador for this. And it's not as though you knew nothing. You know, you knew lots, and you know all the gurus and seen everything. So big applause to you, mate. And we'll see each other as soon as COVID allows me to get there.
And Mervan, you come out anytime, man. You got a court, we'll go out and train. It'll be amazing.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate that invite. Yeah, it definitely would be a lot of fun, especially having known you for a while, Ramon. In terms of the training that you mentioned, it's fantastic that it's, you know, it's not like a hugely long, and you can get a lot of impact on the individual in a short amount of time. What part of the training would you say has been the most impactful that people have said, wow, like this particular aspect of it is what really made the difference for me?
Ramon, because you have a couple of students that have just taken up the game at the age of 55, competitive and want to win. So you're probably, is it gamification that they're up for, or you've done it?
I ask them the question, and it's always kind of like everything, because, you know, one thing that we do is we really break down the fundamental skills of each stroke and break it down into the simplest way. And so we've now teamed up with Billie Jean King's eye coach. So you can train these skills to a large extent from home that have 100% transfer to the court. So just the condensed nature of how quickly you can actually acquire skills that you use to go out and execute the two-shot combinations, the incredible workout that they get, because we're always sort of right at the edge and outside of the comfort zone. So there's never a dull moment. People are either acquiring a skill, or they're gassed, or they're playing a game against themselves, or they're playing a game against you. I get everything a lot. But Mark,
or they're being shouted at, tough love.
Yeah.
Some age of there, come on, you horrible little man, you.
Yeah, Mark is definitely the bad cop. I tend to be more of the good cop. So it's the military in it.
I can see that. Very good. So another question I have, like a common scenario is players who they just, for whatever reason, they go on a big losing streak. And that's obviously very mentally taxing, and that's further reinforcing, you know, the bad results and all that. So what advice do you have for these players to get out of those types of ruts?
Mark, what do you got?
Yeah, okay. So always you just come back to the basics, and you just have to put investment time into the bank and draw it out when you need it the most. So in singles, we've got 4 two-shot combinations really to practice. And in doubles, 3 two-shot combinations. So you just need to put time on the court with or without a coach, going through the processes between the points and executing the shots and just putting that back in. So when you go to play a match, 2 more things. One is people have a view of how well they can play. It doesn't matter what level it is, but let's just say it's 10. So in my mind, I know I can play at that level. So we go and play a match, and for all sorts of reasons, the chances of you playing at 10 are slim. Sleep, work, there are millions of reasons why you won't play at 10. But we still think that's the level I should be playing at. But you might only be playing at 7 on that day. So instead of having 7 as your new 10, you're still trying to play in the gap between 7 and 10. And then making loads of mistakes. And then that reinforces the story going on in your brain of whatever it is that you're self-sabotaging on. So that would certainly be one thing to do, is listen to your body and what level out of 10 are you playing on that day. And then secondly, train the basics and bring the basics to the match. As soon as you start relying on talent, talent has a habit of being a fair weather friend and going off when you need it the most. What many people don't know is that under pressure conditions, and we like to say with pressure conditions, information comes to you quicker, but it's flawed. So it's like instead of 3 burly men putting their shoulders on a big oak door at the same time, the door opening, so the door shuts. So you're getting information coming in a disconnected way. If you haven't trained your brain to trust your instincts, the brain will now be in a mechanical chunking 50 to 100 bits per second of processing speed, with information coming into you quicker but flawed. And you're probably playing one shot at a time, which is reactive, spontaneous. So you've got all those 3 things happening. So it should not come as a surprise. It should come, yes, under pressure, that is where I'm expected to shank the shots. So conversely then, if you train your instincts, so now you can process information up to 14 million bits per second rather than 100 bits per second. If you can train yourself to get into flow, and we all know how great that is with the ball going slowly and like a balloon, and you've trained yourself to hit it with the sweet spot, all those are basics. They sound like talent, but they're basics and they're process. What it isn't is talent. And talent, as we know, is brittle with the reasons that I've just stated.
Very much.
Yeah,
so,
and for some reason, we are addicted to talent. We love talent. Well, Federer, here you go. Ramon, no, we love talent. We want to be talented. Yes, but why can't we just be Djokovic and win?
Federer is much better looking. No, I'm just kidding. So what Mark said, too, I want to add one thing, Maribon, is having a process. Like Mark's talked a lot about process. And one of the big ahas for me was when you're in a match, you're only actually in the point 20% of the time. And 80% of the time, you're in between points, you're in between games, you're in between sets. So if you had a process that, like Mark said, got you into flow, that stripped out all of that noise that's going on in your head, that you could reliably train and practice and then go out and execute on match day, that would keep you centered and would kind of keep you in the zone, that would be absolutely massive. What Mark's done is really boiled down a 25-second process that anybody can do, that no matter what level you're at, can instantly get you into a more clear, more confident frame of mind. And with the training and going out and executing those two-shot combinations, can very quickly start to build the belief that it doesn't really matter what's going to happen next, because you've got your process, you've got your two-shot sequences in the bank, and then you can detach yourself from the outcome and then go out and play on autopilot. So it's very freeing.
Very nice.
And so, Mervyn, this sounds like a mass of information. I feel as we're talking now, there's just an overwhelm of info. But I do want to stress that it's simple, process-driven. Anybody can do it, and it's fun. You don't have to be mentally tough, nor the brains of Einstein. Ramon's done it, and he's won. And he's not Einstein.
Absolutely not. My wife will tell you the same thing.
Still a smart man in my book. Can you give us any insight into that? You know, you mentioned like a 25 second process. Like, what does that generally comprise of, or what is it comprised of?
Ramon?
So basically we've got 25 seconds in between points. And I think what most people do and what I did for years was kind of like, all right, point breaks down. And I would either congratulate myself on a good shot for 10 to 15 seconds, or I'd kick myself and curse under my breath for 10 to 15 seconds based on how the last point went. Then I would kind of look around, you know, I'd look at my opponent and then I'd say, okay, I'm going to go get him and I'm going to go try and serve big. So the brain loves clarity and the brain loves to be sort of calm, you know, in that state of almost zen. And Mark put this thing together. It's pretty amazing. So within the first half second or so, you put your eyes on your strings. And you see pros do this all the time. They're not necessarily fiddling with the strings. They're really just stilling their eyes and focusing on the center of the racket so that the mind gets centered and still. So now we're into, you know, half a second to 1 second. And the next thing we do is we take one dynamic breath.
And Wim Hof.
Like a Wim Hof, yeah. It's like box breathing, right? So inhale for 3 seconds, hold for 3 seconds, and then exhale for 6 seconds. And what that does is it really flushes the mind of all thoughts. You're centered on the breath. You're getting oxygen to the blood. You're getting oxygen to the muscles. You're getting oxygen to the brain. And it has a very calming effect on you and actually empties your brain, so that now we've got a prime fertile field to visualize the next two-shot combination that we've trained. So we have a detailed visualization of how the next two shots are going to go. Once we've done that, the next thing we go through is our getting into our prime state. We learned this from Tony Robbins, where you sort of anchor an emotion that between a auditory signal in our brain, like, come on, or whatever, you say this to your head, then you can anchor a kinesthetic. You can have like a wrist that you snap or a finger that you touch. And then you can visualize, as Mark does, sort of electricity flowing through your body. So now you've got this abundance of energy, and you can actually feel, if you did this, the energy coming through your body and the electricity going through you. And then the last thing, I think, the last thing we do is to go blank. And this is the hardest part, because you could do everything else, but if you start thinking or you start overanalyzing before the next point, you're out of flow. So the last thing you do is just go blank and trust that the next point, because you've trained it, is going to get played out the way that you want it to. And if you can't do that, then you just give yourself one cue, whatever that cue might be. So that would be the 25-second process. And that has to be trained just like everything else, because as soon as you get under pressure, you know, if you haven't trained that in the training court, then it goes away and you're back to the old programming. So that would be the
Ramon,
process.
That's a key point. If you just think how many hours you spent on your forehand, for instance, you need to invest, not a lot, but you need to invest a bit of time to train this new muscle that Ramon has just been through. And we would argue there's three types of pressure on the mat. So the biggest one is the closing out pressure. It's external. It washes all over you. You can't do anything about it. We would certainly do our process for those. The next level of pressure, I think, is linked to what Brad Gilbert would say is that 50% of the points in a match are big points. You know, 30 all is a big point. Win two points on the trot, that's the game. And once we are trained to raise our game and play our best under external pressure, we can now be trained to simulate, generate internal pressure within ourselves. And right now I can feel it washing all over me. So cool. That's the trigger for us to get into our prime state. And then we've got the remaining 50% of points, which are match pressure points. So it's nothing, they're not a turning point for us to trigger pressure, and they're certainly not closing out, but it's not like being on the practice court. So those are the other 50. So, and what we tend to find is, whilst we would do the process for 50% of the points, those match ones, you have to be trained like Djokovic to do the 25 seconds, because that's what you do. That's how you play a match, just like you breathe. But that requires, you know, some elite training. But it does account for the fact that often we hear, and Aaron Boynton was the first to do it in Canada's National Plus 55's final, beating somebody she'd never, ever beaten before. So people do say, oh, it was a really tough match, but I won. I go, okay, Aaron, what's the score? And apologetically, she goes, well, it was 6-2, 6-1, but it was really, really tight. I just happened to have won the big points on most of the games. So that's why somebody can be beating you 7-5, 6-4, and within a fairly short space of time, not only have you reversed that, but you can get down to the 6-2, 6-1s, and it sounds all, you know, voodoo and magic dust and too good to be true. But Ramon might have experienced it. I don't know.
Yep. No, absolutely. I think the biggest thing too is in the doubles training, your ability to have a single unifying, and this is a whole nother can of worms we might not talk about today, but one principle that allows you to team up with anybody and go out and play as a team and execute at a really high level, provided that they're open to you being the leader and sort of asking them to do what you want them to do. So you tell them what you're going to do, and then you ask them if they'd be comfortable doing what you want them to do. And without bragging, I've gone undefeated in the last two USTA leagues, playing with a variety of different partners because of that, because you have a plan and you have a process that you can go out and do. This is a kid who is overweight, had the worst story athletically that you could possibly have, that got bumped up from a 4.0 to 4.5 because I was dealing with injuries. And now, you know, I'm planning to go out and be a 5.0 in the next year or so, and I'll finally be able to compete with you, Maribon. So it'll be great. So it's really phenomenal training. And I think one thing people might be curious about is we talked about the four skills of execution and pressure and the knowledge of tactics and then the mental and emotional training. And, you know, how does Djokovic do this? Well, what Mark and I have done in the last year is create a tool that's free that you can go out and it'll ask you a series of questions. And then based on how you answer those questions, will give you a score in each of those four areas. And it'll tell you probably a lot about what you're going through now, but more importantly, how you can go out and train to move that needle just a tick to the right. And if everybody got a tick better in execution and tactics and pressure and the mental, emotional, that would be amazing. So you can actually take that quiz and that tool if you'd like. Maribon, we've got a link for you. I don't know if there's a way to put this in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure, Ramon. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I will put the link in the show notes. I can read it to you right now briefly, which it's going to be mirban.thewinningformula.tennis. So that's mirban.thewinningformula.tennis. But yes, if you look in the show notes in your podcast app of choice or on tennisfiles.com/podcast, then you will see the link in the show notes for sure.
Awesome. And it's great. It's great fun. And it'll sort of force you to think about how you actually perform in certain situations, what's going on in your head. And you will, I guarantee you, have a great time. You'll learn some stuff that'll help you immediately. And that tool is free. So if you're listening to this and you want to take your competitive tennis game to the next level, that would be a really good thing for you to do.
Awesome. Fantastic stuff. I was curious too to ask, you know, besides the training, do you find that other extraneous things like sleep, nutrition, like are those things that you talk about at all? Or like, do you have any opinions on how much that can potentially affect performance?
Well, this has not been medically confirmed, but I think the carne asada and beer diet is very good for performance.
Sounds delicious.
No. No, it's important. I think, you know, one of the things I've learned the hard way is, you know, recovery is so important, especially as we get older. And to put your body through this stuff, we've got to do things to keep ourselves out there. Mark's doing yoga for, what's it called? Stiff guy yoga, Mark?
Stiff guy yoga. Get your 25-year-old body back in 30 days. And you can see it's worked, Mervin. It's worked.
Looks good. Wow, I'm going to check that out.
Just imagine what it was like before I did the yoga.
And as a plug for anybody listening to this, there's a guy out there who you may have heard of. His name is Ben Patrick. We don't get any sort of affiliate commissions from him, but his stuff is so good. You can find him on YouTube as Knees Over Toes Guy. For the lower body, I mean, his stuff is incredible. And then, yes, sleeping, nutrition, all of that stuff is, you know, if you want to be playing at a high level in your 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, I haven't found a way around it yet. Got to eat good food and got to sleep.
Well, as we said a few times, mind, body, and soul is integrated. So give yourself a best chance of winning and recovery. And having more fun, which is what it's all about, you ought to obviously have better sleep and have hydration and nutrition and stretch and have strength. You know, why wouldn't you? And tennis, of course, is a very unbalanced sport. So I know, not personally, but as part of the Winning Summit, the fitness trainer for Djokovic trains as obsessive is about balance. And particularly balance in transition from one shot to the other is a key component because we obviously serve one way, we do forehands one way, we become very unbalanced in our body.
Yes, 100%. This is, I was going to say a fun question, but it's not actually, especially for you, Mark, but, you know, we're recording this the day after the Euros. And I know I mentioned this before the podcast, so it's probably torturing Mark, but, and you know, I'm a big, Premier League fan for soccer. So football, I should say. So, how do any of the viewers who are England fans mentally recover from yesterday?
Well, it's a trauma, isn't it? It is a trauma. And from my point of view, we had them. We had them, and we could have put our foot down and made sure they didn't get up. But no, come on, let's get your confidence back. We'll defend. No, we hate seeing you. You're going to cry. Come on, let's let you go back in the game. So we did that for a while. And then interesting, bringing big point player training into penalties. Our three lads that missed without being anything but kind and supportive to them because they put themselves there. But it was interesting to note that they used a lot of talent on their penalty taking. Kane, Maguire became Djokovic-like, ran up, had a great point of contact, had a visualization where the ball was going to go, and that was their process. And if the goalkeeper saved it, he saved it, but the chances are unlikely. Whereas the three that missed it did some fancy run-up and a stutter and looked into the goalkeeper's eyes, went them one way, tried to go the ball in another way. And that probably works on the training ground. I don't think it works with a global audience when you're there to shoot and win the European Championships. Talent goes. It's a fair-weather friend. There you go. Thanks for asking me that, because I've got some of my venom and passion out there.
For sure, for sure. It's funny because I actually interviewed Claudio Pistolesi last week or a few days ago, and you know he's a big Italy fan. And yeah. Anyways, I commiserations. You know, I was hoping for Kane to get his first trophy because I'm a Hotspurs fan, Tottenham. But that wasn't to be either. But you know,
have you taken counseling for that, by the way?
No, I just tell myself jokes every day, and that seems to work for me. That's what I do.
Oof, yeah. You are a proper football fan because Tottenham put you through the ringer every season.
Yes, it's very mentally draining. I think I'm going to need to go and fill out the questions on the page that I recommend everyone else go to, and that would be good. So I just want to close by, well, maybe two questions, but the first question is what I ask pretty much every guest, and I'll actually ask it to both of you, which is, if you could erect a huge billboard in the most trafficked street in your city, and you could have it say anything that you want it to say, and I'm stealing this directly from Tim Ferriss, great podcast, but okay. what would you put on that?
Have fun, and the big fat W's will come.
And you made it rhyme. That's amazing.
I've just made that up. I'm so proud of myself.
Mark the rapper. No, I'm just kidding.
DJ Jeffrey. Absolutely.
Come on, boy. Right. Get him down.
That's right. Now for you, Ramon.
I would say, oh man, that's a tough question. I would say start your day intentionally. Have a vision of what your future is going to be, and be more in love with your future than your past.
Love that. That's great. So, and the last question, I just want to give you both the floor just to see if you have any, you know, closing thoughts or anything that you want to say to the audience before we close for this episode.
Oh, thank you. I would like to go first, Ramon. So really, I want to stress, this is for any age and any ability level, that this is straightforward. I wouldn't call it simple, but I would call it straightforward. And you don't need to change your grip, and you don't need to become mentally tough to get more fun. And there's only a percentage of people that play tennis because they are a competitive beast and they want to win matches. People play tennis for fun. That's great and social. People play tennis to get fit. That's fun. People do competitive recreational tennis. That's fine. But there's only a percentage of us that play tennis because we love it and we're competitive animals that we win, and we know we win, should win more. So for those, I would beg you, come try the training program. The risk and the guarantees are all on us. and let you not do what I did for decades in my life, which was learn by painful experience and hope that at one day you find out how to win the big points under pressure. Because you can be trained just like the military do.
Perfect. Yeah, I'd just like to thank you. I'd like to thank you, Mayor Bond, for having us on here. You're a phenomenal host. This is always fun. And I want to thank you guys for listening to this. And if you are a competitive tennis player, like Mark said, and you want to take the next step in your evolution and quickly start beating the players that you may have lost to, or you have a vision of where you want to go, but maybe you're getting up there, you're 50, you're 60. You can absolutely quickly start winning more matches at your level. We've had people do it repeatedly. And I would just invite you to take that diagnostic tool to find out where you're starting from, because you can't know the path to get to where you want to go until you know where you're starting from. So we got that tool for you. It's at marebon.thewinningformula.tennis. We'll put it in the show notes. And I just want to thank you all for listening. And Mayor Bond, thanks again for having us, man.
Mayor Bond, thank you for the invitation. Really, really appreciate it.
For sure. Thank you both.
And I really hope you can come down to Ramon's court. Love to train you.
Yeah, that would be amazing. We'll definitely have to set that up at Ramon's place. We'd have a great time. So I want to thank you both too for all your work, in this area of tennis, and you've clearly been impacting a lot of players for the better, as I've, seen a lot of testimonials on the website. Yeah. So, thanks again. And I'm sure we'll chat again soon, and thanks everybody for listening as well. And we'll talk to you later.
All right. I hope you really enjoyed this fun interview with myself, Mark Jeffrey, and Ramon Osa. And thanks to you both, you gents, for coming on to the show. Really enjoyed it. Learned a lot for sure. And again, really encourage you to check out the Big Point Player free quiz. Just go to mehrban.thewinningformula.tennis. That's mehrban.thewinningformula.tennis. And you'll find out a lot more about yourself and how you can improve your tennis career. All right. I also would really appreciate it if you would subscribe to the Tennis Files podcast. If you haven't already, just hit that subscribe button in your podcast app of choice that you use to listen to the show. And let me leave you with a quote, as I often love to do at the end of the show as well. And this one is by Audrey Hepburn. And Audrey said, "Nothing is impossible. The word itself says I'm possible." Really like that one. I know, maybe some of you might think that's corny or something, but it is very true and definitely inspiring. And yeah, love that one. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening. We've got a great episode coming up with Coach Claudio Pistolesi, who I'm sure was very happy with the results of the Euros finals, if any of you watch soccer. So commiserations to the English fans and congrats to the Italian fans, and really congrats to both for a great tournament. All right, well, that is it for this one, and I will see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.